Hi. I'm Vanessa and I'm an alcoholic. Is anybody else really nervous and hot and you guys just want to go? I drank, it was bad, and now I'm sober, so good night. Happy Easter. I kid. I'm very grateful to be here, especially on a holiday. Holidays are not the easiest for me anymore. They used to be some of the best days of my life. I'm going to cry from the get-go, guys, so there you go. And they're different now. And now I spend holidays with different family, and that's you guys. My sobriety date is September 26, 2019. Thanks. I have a lot of dates in my life that mean something to me. You know, I have a wedding anniversary. I have a lot of kids. I have a lot of grandkids. And I love their birthdays. One of them had their birthday, you know, the other day. Got another one who has a birthday. They all have birthdays all the time. But my sobriety day is the best day of my life. That is the day my life completely changed. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that on that day. I didn't know what life was going to become. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to stay sober. I didn't know if I wanted to stay sober. I didn't, because I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous for myself. And that's the truth. I came because I had a very alcoholic husband who needed help. And he needed a ride. You know? And it takes what it takes to get here. And when I first got here, oh God, I was silly. I was like, no, you need to be here for yourself. I don't care what brought you here. I don't care if a judge sent you here, if jail sent you here, if your kids are looking at you with fear in your eyes and they're like, Mom, Dad, please get help. I do not care what brought you here. You came here for a reason. What matters is if you stay here. Because if you're an alcoholic like me, I need to be here. I need to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to have a sponsor. I need to do the things. I had a normal childhood. I don't have alcoholic parents. I had everything I wanted. I definitely had everything I needed. Sometimes my parents loved each other. Sometimes they did not. That had nothing to do with me. They showed up for me every single day. My mom and dad were the best parents ever, and I always joke, but I'm not joking. If you tell me your parents are better than mine, I will fight you, because mine were the best. I had love. I had everything. I had everything. And I took it for granted from the beginning. I know that today. I don't know that when I'm, you know, 7 years old and 8 years old and a teenager, and I'm looking at my parents with hatred or disgust in my eyes because don't you know what I'm going through, and you can't possibly know, and then you become a parent and it turns out your parents know exactly what you're going through at every moment of your life. And I loved my parents, but I was incapable of loving them the way they deserved, even when I was little. You know, and there's some things I know about myself today that I did not know. I did not know when I was 5. I didn't know when I was 25. And I didn't know when I was 40. I'm so full of fear. I'm so full of fear. I'm scared that the world is going to end. You know, that catastrophes are going to happen. The earthquake, we're going to have an earthquake and the world is going to get swallowed up. I'm scared that I'm letting my parents down, that I'm not saying and doing the right things. I'm scared that I'm not a good example for my sister and then sisters, you know, because I had a couple of them who came when I was a little bit older. I'm scared in school. What if I say the wrong thing? What if I don't get good grades? It's just constant fear, fear, fear. I have been wanting to take a drink since I was probably 1, and I had no idea. Because when I did take my first real drink at 13, I found the feeling I had been searching for. I didn't know that's what I was searching for, because what I needed was I needed to breathe. It felt like I had been holding my breath my entire life at 13. Fists like this all the time, shoulders tensed, looking behind me. What do you think of me? What do you think of me? Do you love me? I don't love myself. Like, I don't love myself, but you need to love me. I need you to love me and like me, please. And when I get older, I'm willing to do things, you know, that you shouldn't do to try to get people's love or just to try to get them to be your friend. And I've learned to share in a general way, you know. But the reality is from an early age, I was dark and I was disgusting. My thoughts were, my actions were, and I was willing to go to any lengths to get what I need. And I'm not an everyday drinker at 13. I would like to be. Of course I would like to be. I would like to drink before school. I would like to drink during school, after school, weekends. Like, I would just like to have that feeling all the day, because taking tests would be easier. Playing softball, that probably wouldn't have been easier, but in my mind it probably would have been easier, because I would have been able to breathe. And I wouldn't have cared quite so much what other people think of me. And, you know, when I was young, I had goals. It's funny, the longer I stay sober, the more things I realize, and some of those things I realize are really cool, and other things I realize aren't so cool. I had goals when I was a kid. I don't know when I lost those, but eventually I did. I had goals. I was a really good softball player, like really good. It was the only time actually that I felt comfortable was when I was on that ball field. I can play almost any position. I'm strong. I can hit the ball hard. I can run fast. And I knew that about myself. And I'm going to get a scholarship, and I'm going to get the hell away from all of you, because you guys are my problem. You don't like me enough. I should be more popular. I should be prom queen. I should be made a cheerleader, and I haven't even tried out for cheerleading, but that's how much you should like me. You know? And I'm doing the things. I thought I got better grades than I was getting, and then I hit like 45 and I had to get my transcripts, and I was like, oh, I didn't get that great of grades. But back then I thought I did, but I got good enough grades. I got good enough grades. And I got that scholarship. I worked really hard. There were no half measures when it came to softball. I will do what I need to do to be good and to be better than you. And when I found out I had that scholarship, I was like, that's it. My life is going to change. It's going to be so great. It's going to be so great. And then my last softball game of my senior year, I started on varsity all 4 years, every game, and my dad was at every single game, and I took that for granted. And that last game, we finished, you know, didn't make playoffs. That's okay, because I'm not staying here. I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here. My dad asked me if I wanted to take a walk. And I said, sure. And he goes, all right, let's go. And we start walking. And he says, you don't have that scholarship, Vanessa. And that was my bottom. That was my bottom right there. That led me straight to the bottle. I had no idea what I was going to do. There was no backup plan. There was nothing. But there was alcohol. I knew I could count on that. I knew I could go to that. And I started drinking every day. I finished high school. I hated everybody. I hated everything. I hated myself. Like, the one goal I had was gone. It wasn't like, okay, you know what? This didn't work out. I'll do this. It was, no, this didn't work out. I will drink. I will drink. And everything will be better. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. So that's the goal now. You know, I'm 17, 18 years old. I can't buy alcohol on my own. My goals became, who can I get to buy me what I need? and I like other things besides alcohol. It's about damn time. I know this is my home group, but Jesus, I like water too. I'm just kidding, thank you. And I respect Alcoholics Anonymous, so I will say this briefly. I really love smoking weed, and I really love snorting meth. That's all there is to it. But at the end of the day, alcohol is my solution. It is my baby. It is my teddy bear that I will carry around with me like this. It does not fail me until it does. I'm an everyday drinker. I'm 17, 18 years old. I have no goals. I have no goals. You know, I have my parents depending on me because I have a little sister. She's 15 years younger than I am. And, you know, things had gone south in the financial department for my parents. And you know, it's funny how God has always been working in my life and taking care of me and knowing what's best for me. But I don't know that until after the fact. Like, I don't know it while it's happening. Like, oh God, I didn't get this scholarship so that I could be home for my parents to take care of this little girl because they don't have the money for daycare and babysitters. I'm not thinking that when I'm 18 years old. I'm thinking they're keeping me from doing what I want to do. So I'll just do what I need to do while I take care of this little girl. It doesn't matter that her life is in my hands and how much I love and adore this little girl. She is my favorite little person. She is my baby. But I'll take her on drug deals. I'll drink and drive. Well, I wasn't driving, but my friend was driving, you know, because I'm so selfish. I'm not going to get my driver's license because I don't want to get a DUI. I'm smart. But I don't care if my friend does. You know, it never occurs to me to say maybe we shouldn't be doing this because I'm very selfish. All I care about is what I'm getting in that moment. And I can go on and on and on about this stuff. You know, I get pregnant at 20. I have a beautiful little boy who's going to save me, but he doesn't. Because you, my kids, my husband, nobody can save me. I can't save me. And then I meet a guy. And I don't necessarily think that he's going to save me, but I think I'm going to save him. Because I know about him. I know he likes to drink. I know he gets DUIs. I know he goes to jail. I heard the phone calls with my dad and his brother. I said I wasn't going to cuss, but sometimes I need to cuss because it's part of the script. You know, of my dad getting these phone calls. God damn it, Jason, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Sorry, Mark, when you hear this in a recording, if you listen. I knew this guy liked to drink, but I'm going to save him because I'm 10 years younger than him. I'm really cute. I'm thin because I like to do a lot of meth. I haven't eaten in 2 years. I will be enough, and we're going to go off into the sunset, and we're going to have a really beautiful life. And that's not the way it went. We get married. And we have a little girl, and we have four boys, and I'm married, and I get to be a stay-at-home mom, and I get to homeschool my kids, and I'm involved in church. Like, I run a preschool program at church on Wednesdays, and nobody knows that I hate all of it, because at this point, I'm dying. I am dying. I am a full-blown alcoholic. I don't know it, though. I have no idea. I know he is. I know he is. He drinks at work. He drinks and drives. I'm never going to drink and drive until I have to. I'm never going to drink and drive with my kids in the car like he does. It doesn't matter that I'm in the front seat. It doesn't occur to me to tell my husband, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Maybe you shouldn't be doing this because I'm selfish and self-centered, and I need him to take me where we're, you know, wherever we need to go because I know where we're going, we're going to drink. I don't look in the back seat at my kids because what if they look scared and then I'm going to feel guilty? How dare you? How dare my kids make me feel guilty for doing what I need to do because I think this is the only way I can show up as a mom. This is the only way I can show up as a wife. And I get mad at him for coming home drunk. It doesn't matter that I make excuses like I need to go get baked potatoes for a barbecue. No, I don't need to get baked potatoes for a damn barbecue. I need to go get a little Shooters and shoot them in my car on my street because I don't want him to know how much I'm drinking. Because I'm judging him, but how dare he judge me? And that's just how it keeps going and going and going. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And I don't care about paying bills. I want to drink. I don't care about paying the rent. I want to drink. I don't care if the car gets repoed. I care, but I don't care. Because if I cared, I would do something about it, right? Because I know about AA. I know what I think I know about AA. My mother-in-law is sober. My brother-in-law is sober at this point. But I don't know what AA is. I think it's for a bunch of losers who can't get their stuff together. That's what I know about AA. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I remember when I heard it in a meeting and somebody described themselves as a hope to die alcoholic. And that made sense to me. That is how I had been feeling for more years than I can count. Because first it's, okay, I'm going to kill myself. Because I don't know I'm an alcoholic, but I know something's not right. Something is not right. I mean, it's everybody else's fault, of course, but I don't want to be a part of this. And I'll write notes. And I don't write happy, nice, sweet suicide notes. I write notes that shame you, and they shame you because it's your fault. It's your fault. And then I tear them up in teeny tiny pieces. And I take another drink, and I pass out, and I wake up, and it's like, damn it, I gotta do this again, and again, and again, and again. And my last year of drinking was perfect. And I don't mean it was perfect, that it was really great. We had so much fun drinking that we came to AA together. I mean that it was dark and disgusting, and it brought me crashing down to my knees. And brought me to AA. I like to hit my husband. Sometimes I joke about it. Sometimes I cry about it. Because it's not right. But that's my story. Because it makes me feel better when I do it. Putting my hands on him gave me the feeling that alcohol used to give me. I felt powerful. I could breathe. But that feeling only lasts for like a few minutes. And then there's more shame, and I just drink because it's like, I just need this to stop. Please, can my brain just stop for 10 minutes? Why can't I breathe anymore? My fists are like this again. My shoulders are tense. I don't belong on this planet. God doesn't listen to me. I wake up every morning. I'm letting everybody down. Alcohol's not doing it for me. The few minutes of relief I get when I hit him or punch him or choke him are not working. Nothing is working. I'm telling him he needs to get help. I don't know what that looked like. I don't know what treatment really is. I'm calling Tarzana and I'm like, how is he going to move to Tarzana and go to treatment? I don't know that there's a place out here. I've never heard of sober living. In fact, when I got sober and I heard about sober living, I'm like, that sounds fun. And my husband said, I don't think it's summer camp. I know nothing. I know nothing of getting sober. I don't know what that means. But something has to change because if it doesn't, I will kill him. I will kill my kids and I will kill myself. Because there is no hope. There's none. There's no hope in the bottle. There's no hope on this planet. God is failing me. I know he hates me. And if he doesn't hate me, then he's not even there. And after one particularly bad night, where I'm shaming him and I'm demoralizing him and I'm throwing him around and I'm trying to feel better and he's telling me it's not my fault that it's him. And I know it's not him. I know it's not him. But I'm disgusted. And I asked him what's wrong with him and he said, I don't know, I need help. And a couple days later, he found a meeting at the Open Door. I don't know. I still don't know how you found that meeting. Because what's a meeting guide? What's a... I have no idea. Google, maybe. The Google? It's Tracy says. And he texted me from work and said, I found a meeting. But the way AA works, and he's telling me this, is that if you're drunk, you can't share. He's like, so I have to get drunk before the meeting because I can't share at the meeting. And I'm like, I don't even know what this fool is talking about. But if it's going to get him sober, whatever. I will wait to drink. I will be your designated driver. And whatever, let's go to a meeting. So I picked him up from work. He's drunk. We go to the meeting. I'm terrified. He's terrified. I'm shaking out of fear, but I'm also shaking because I haven't had a drink yet. Because I think you get kicked out of AA if you show up drunk. By the way, show up to AA drunk. I mean, don't get drunk. All of you stay sober, but you know what I mean. They're not going to kick you out. They're not. And we walk in, and people shake our hands, and they hug us, and they start, you know, they sit down next to me, and I don't know you, and you tell me about AA, and you tell me about meetings, and you know, I remember this guy tells me about the hot dog meeting, and I'm like, wow, that's cool. And I don't stop drinking after that meeting, but I couldn't breathe yet. I'm still scared. I still want to die, but there was a really small amount of hope. There's no willingness yet, because I still don't know at this point that I need to get sober. I don't know that I'm an alcoholic. But I did feel just enough hope that when he said, let's go next Sunday, I said, okay. And we do the same thing. I pick him up from work and he's drunk and we show up to the meeting and I see a face that I saw the week before, you know? And he knew my husband was drunk and he didn't run. He didn't run. And there was a woman sharing at a podium and she started talking about her alcoholism. And her alcoholism sounded a lot like how I drink and a lot like how I think. And I'm in this meeting and I'm listening to her and if she was in this room right now, I would not know it. I would have no idea. I don't know her name. I know nothing about her. But I know she's an alcoholic. And I know she had that mental obsession and that physical craving, and that made sense to me. And she talked about how she thinks about alcohol, how she wakes up and she thinks about a drink, and she thinks about a drink before she takes a drink, and she feels better before she even takes the drink. And I'm like, yes, I know what you're talking about. And nobody had ever described how I was feeling, because of course I think I'm the only one who feels this way. It turns out every single one of you has felt the way I felt. And I'm still not ready to raise my hand, but it's like, okay, I think I might be an alcoholic. And on September 22nd, I went out of town with my sister. And I got really drunk, and my daughter was with me. She was 12. She's in that room right now, watching your kids. And I put her in danger. And she was my safe place. And 12-year-olds aren't supposed to be their parents' safe place. They're not supposed to take care of me. I'm supposed to take care of my kids. I'm supposed to love them unconditionally. I'm supposed to be there for whatever they need, and I wasn't. But she was. And my sister's driving, and my sister was drunk, but she wasn't as drunk as me, and we needed to get away from where we were, and I can't breathe. And it wasn't like the not being able to breathe that I've been experiencing for the last, you know, 20 plus years. It was I could not breathe, and it was like, okay, maybe this is it. I'm going to have a heart attack, a stroke, something. And I put my hands above my head like this, because it was like, okay, maybe I can get a breath. She put her sweet hand on mine. And I had my first spiritual experience, and I'm in that car, and I thought, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. I need help. And you guys told me where to go. because I had listened in those meetings. I had. God had opened my ears. And on September 25th, I went to a meeting and I raised my hand. I raised my hand because I am an alcoholic. And right before I raised my hand, my husband raised his hand. And we hadn't planned it. It wasn't like we were at home drinking coffee. Okay, we're going to go to a meeting. And you're going to raise your hand first. And then I'm going to raise my hand. And then we're going to live happily ever after. There was no plan. Because neither one of us had any idea what was going on in the other one's head. I had no idea. And I could breathe. I could breathe. And I went home on September 25th, and I had probably like that much wine left. I love wine. I love vodka. I love Jaeger. I love beer. And I don't like the taste of it. Like, forget about it. Except Jaeger. I like black licorice. I don't like the taste. I like what it does for me. And I finished my little bit of wine, and he finished his beer. And I went to bed that night, and I woke up on September 26th, and I didn't feel ashamed. I didn't feel remorse. I felt like maybe something's gonna change. And I go to work, and I told my friends at work immediately that I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because they knew what had been going on in my house. They knew it. And I didn't just need help from AA. I needed people in my life because I've been hiding who I am for years. Nobody knew I drank the way. I don't say this with pride, like I'm such a great alcoholic. Nobody knew. Nobody knew I was dying. Nobody knew how much I hated my life. Nobody knew. You guys all, well, not all of you, but I know a lot of you. I've heard your stories and you say people are asking you, what is wrong with you? Nobody asked me that. Nobody asked me what's wrong with you. And I needed somebody to. I wouldn't have had an answer for it, but I needed somebody maybe to plant a seed in my head that there is something wrong with you. And for the first time in my life, I was able to be honest. And then my husband texted me, don't buy any alcohol today. I was like, okay, I was serious when I raised my hand, but am I that serious? And it turns out I was. And I got a sponsor, and not of my own choosing, and not because I was ready, but because God knew what I needed. And God had been working in my life when I was 5 years old and 13 years old and 39 and 40. And he was working on that day when a woman came up to me at the open door. And, you know, she and I had already talked a couple times. And she has no concept of personal space. She's like, here. And she's like, I can't be your sponsor, but I can be your temporary sponsor. And I have no idea what that means. But I said yes. And she said, okay, I want you to call me every day. And I want you to text me a gratitude list. And I'm like, I have nothing to be grateful for. Nothing. Because I haven't had a drink in a couple days, but I'm still shaking and I'm still scared. And I don't know that I'm going to stay sober. I don't know. I know nothing. I know nothing. But there was enough willingness and there was definitely enough desperation. So I would text her and I'm like, I'm grateful for socks and water and a car. I don't know. That was all I could find, but it's enough. It's enough. It was enough. And then she invited me to a meeting outside of the open door. She invited me to High Desert, the Friday night speaker meeting. Because this meeting used to be on Fridays. And I went with her. And I sat right next to her, and she's, like, real close to me. And even to this day, like, I don't even, in this meeting, like, I would rather there be a seat in between my husband and I because, oh, don't sit next to me. I can breathe, but I can't breathe that great. And she's right there next to me. And on the break, she grabbed my hand and ran me to the back of the room, and she introduced me to a woman, and she said, she can be your sponsor. And this woman looked at me and introduced herself and then asked me, Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said yes, because I have no other options. I have nothing left but to say yes to this question, and I meant it. And we got into the work, and you know, I remember we met at the book study, and it was before she and I had even met for our first time, and I have a book that my husband had bought, and she's like, "Do you have a book?" I'm like, "Yeah, my husband and I are sharing it," and she was like, "No." I'm like, "Why not? We have the same sobriety date." And she bought me a book, and she said, I want you to read the doctor's opinion." And I said, "Okay, I can do that." And she said, "And then we're going to meet on this day, and we're going to meet at this time, and I'm going to read that book to you." And I'm like, "But I can read." But I said I was willing. I said I was willing. So it was like, okay, cool. And we met at Denny's, where we meet after this meeting, and we sat in a booth. And I had read the doctor's opinion by myself, and I, you know, I could relate to it. I could relate to it by myself. But when another woman sat across from me and she read it to me, my whole world opened up. And I took the steps with her. And there were days I wanted to fight her. There were days I was mad at her. Because I know I said I was willing to go to any lengths, but maybe not that length, but I did it anyway. I did it anyway, and I would throw fits like a little toddler. He can tell you that. But I did it anyway, because my life depends on it, and my life still depends on it today. So I continue to do those things that she taught me. I got commitments. I still get commitments. She told me be of service. I am still of service. Eventually, she told me to start raising my hand and sponsor women, and I was very scared, because what do I have to give to another woman? How am I going to do this? I'm still scared. I'm still terrified. I can breathe a little bit easier. I haven't had a drink in 9 months, but what am I going to give to another woman? And she said, "You just do what I did with you." And I'm like, "Okay, I can do that. I can do that." And I started raising my hand. And, you know, a woman asked me to be her sponsor. And I think, you know, most of us, if you haven't had a sponsor and you get your first sponsee, just so you know, they're probably going to drink again, and they're probably going to stop calling you after the second time they call you. And that's okay. That's the exact experience I needed to have of, what did I do wrong? Nothing, because it's not about me. It's not about me. It's about them and their relationship with God, because I am not their God. And my sponsor is not my God. I have a God of my own understanding today, and he's really cool, and we fight, and I yell at him, and I scream, and I question every choice he makes in my life, and it's all okay. It's all okay. And I only have a few minutes left, you know, but there's, you know, I hear a lot of speakers. I love speaker meetings. It's how I found out I was an alcoholic. You know, and then there's some people, I've heard them so many times, and they share the exact same way, and I can quote them, but you know what? I need those people in my life. I do. But I've always been like, I'm not going to be like that. I'm going to share different every time so that you guys don't get sick of me, and you're not like, ah, crap, Vanessa again. But there's a few things in my life that I'm going to share probably every time I speak, because they were meaningful and they were important. And I need to remember them. I need to remember my last drunk. I have to remember that day of how dark and disgusting I felt, and that it was the point I needed to get sober. I need to remember drinking in the hospital when my dad had a stroke. I need to remember that day, that my favorite person in the whole world is still not enough for me not to drink in the hospital, because that's what I need, and I'm selfish and self-centered. I need to remember the day he died on September 10th, 16 days before I turn one. And I get to show up for my mom and my sisters and my husband and my kids. I need to remember those days that I got to stay sober through that day. I need to remember July 15th, 2024, when my mom took her last breath. And I got to have my hand right here. I got to have my hand right here. I don't get to be there with my hand right there if I'm drinking. I'll be in the bathroom taking a drink while she's dying. That's what I will do when I'm drinking. When my husband loses his job and calls me and I can hear tears in his voice and I get to honestly say, it's okay, that's not me. I don't say it's okay. I turn everything into a catastrophe. World's going to come crumbling down. It's all going to be horrible. We're going to live in a Dorito bag. And then a month later, I get to lose my job. And I don't go take a drink. I go directly to a meeting. And the day my dad died, I went to a meeting. And the day my mom died, I went to a meeting. And the day he lost his job, I went to a meeting. And the day I lost my job, I went to a meeting. Because you guys, God working through you saved my life. Why would I not run to you? Why would I not run to you? Why would I run home and sit in self-pity? You guys told me not to do that, and I believe you. I know where sitting in self-pity gets me. I've done it in sobriety. All those bedevilments, I have experienced them way too much in sobriety. Way too much. The things I have memorized in the big book are the bedevilments, where the resentment prayers are in the book. But there's one other thing I have memorized in the book, and that's where you find God. You find him on page 55. But that's not really where you find him. I find him in you guys, and because of you guys, then I get to find him in myself. Because he's been there the whole time. He's been there the whole time. I have a really beautiful life today. The fact that I get to share that day with him. He was joking. I know my time's almost up, but whatever. I don't care. And you know the speaker last week, if you were here last week, he was like, that guy had props. Are you going to have props? I'm like, you're my prop. Like, how cool is that? The plan was not for us to get sober. The plan was to die drunk. My daughter's in the room with you guys' kids. Got to talk to some of our kids yesterday. Got to talk to more of our kids today. We show up for them. That baby sister who I took with me on drug deals and drink and drive, I get to be in her wedding in a few weeks and carry her tiny little baby because she trusts me. She knows who I am. She knows exactly what I did. But because of who you guys have shown me how to be, I get to show up for all those people I love more than anything. Thank you for my sobriety.